Hello, this is the delightful Andrew Topping, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast. Podcast beats rock.
Yeah. This is Rock Paper Podcast with Shane and his guests. You will listen to what he says.
Shane will drive to your house and bring you brownies and talk for hours. It's Rock Paper Podcast.
Tell me why. All you gotta do is download Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from the Valley Park Funny Bone. My guest today is Andrew Topping, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thank you for having me on, Shane. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm excited to catch up with you and sit down and talk. And looking at a beautiful headshot signed by...
By myself, behind the bar next to Dan Mangini and the Fryman.
Yeah, this is, I mean...
The new Mount Rushmore is what I call it.
That's when you know you made it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I didn't just go and put that up without telling my manager.
Right, yeah, who would do that?
Exactly, and we didn't keep it up because he thought it was so funny.
When would that happen in a world?
Yeah, exactly. I actually think I put that up when Jamie Kennedy was here.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you get to watch him?
Yeah, I got to see him.
Yeah? Pretty good time, or...
He's all right. I mean, all those guys who are like, you know, celebrities like that who are coming to comedy clubs, they're not bad.
Right.
They're all famous for a reason. Dustin Diamond was the best example of that, because as soon as he gets on stage, it didn't matter how big the crowd was, he came with the exact same amount of energy every single time. And I mean, it was a fucking performance every single time. Didn't matter how many people were here. So that was real interesting to watch. Gave me a new respect for the guy.
Yeah. I don't know. I've never seen Dustin, but I did see Chris Kattan when he was, drove up to Columbia and saw him at Deja Vu with Sean O'Brien and Josh Arnold.
And someone else. I think they switched him out, though, the other one.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong.
Yeah, I know those. But anyway. But Chris was all right. Like, you know, you can tell he's not really a stand-up. It was more kind of storytelling a little bit and
character work. I think it was Friday night on one of the shows. He was doing his thing when he was here. He was doing his thing where he starts doing a Saturday Night Live characters.
Yeah.
And it was busy, so he had to stretch a little, and he just goes, "What else did I do?"
Yeah, right.
Just kicking it to the audience like that. Like, I can't remember them all. Yeah. What do you remember?
Sure. Yeah, he kind of did a similar thing. Like, you could tell he wasn't, like, very... secure with it, you know, being on the stage or like that. Like, he was like, you know, he said stuff like, I hope you all had a good time, you know, kind of stuff. It was like...
Exactly. His opening line, though, I really liked. Yeah. When he would do the, "What is love?" And then he'd bob his head for like a second and then cut it out. Right. And he goes, "Not many of you know this, but that song is called The Death of Me." I thought that was a great line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did, when I saw him in Columbia, he just kind of did it a little bit. And he's like, "All right, it's enough of that," or something like that. Or, like, "Got that out of the way," or something like that.
Exactly, yeah.
It's, I don't know, like, it's kind of weird to be at that kind of level where, you know, you're just kind of that, you have to do that thing or whatever it is.
Yeah, and a lot of stuff is, a lot of other opportunities have dried up, so you got to get into the live performance, go and meet your fans personally. So that's why, you know, guys like them come to places like this. There's other reasons, but, you know, part of the reason is nothing helps keeping people coming back to your shows like meeting them after the show and signing their tits or whatever. You know?
I did meet him and meet Chris, and he, you know, super nice guy, very, you know, real cool about everything. Some of those I met. I know he was just in town a little bit ago. Pauly Shore.
Pauly Shore was actually a really cool dude. Yeah. Really funny, my buddy. I don't know. Okay, so they went somewhere where there's barbecue outside in St. Louis, you know, and Pauly Shore loves the barbecue. And so he walks up to the guy at the stand, and my buddy told me this story. He goes up to the guy at the stand, he's like, "Hey, buddy, you remember me from last time?" And the guy goes, "No." And he goes, "Nah, last time I was here, I'm pretty sure you were the guy." And the guy goes, "I've been here 2 weeks." I just like the attitude there. It's like, I haven't met Pauly Shore twice.
Sure, yeah.
In 2 weeks.
You don't remember the weasel?
That was insane, because I didn't know that he would refer to himself like that in private. Like, our green room is the office, so when I'm selling tickets here, they're sitting like 10 feet from me. So eventually they're going to talk to me. And, I mean, if it was like a, like, you know, normally when you or I would say I, he would say the wheeze.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. The wheeze needs some coffee. Yeah. Gotta get that caffeine. And that's him in real life. It's very, very interesting. He was one of the better acts, though. His material is actually pretty solid.
Some a couple years ago, it was at Plush. Steve Simone and John Menegoni opened up that show.
Yeah, Goni told me about that. Yeah. And Simone was opening for him at the time. He's got this new guy who's really cool.
Yeah.
Jesus something. Jesus was awesome.
But what I thought was weird about Pauly is, like, he doesn't like, when he'd do meet and greet stuff afterwards, that he didn't really, like, he put, like, a couch there. Like, everybody sat, like, on the couch, and he took a picture, like, standing behind you. And he did that at Plush, and then I saw friends had pictures with him, and it was the exact same thing. Like, people are
sitting on one of our high backs. Yeah.
And it's like, it was kind of, it's a little weird. It's like, I don't know if he just doesn't want to touch people or kind of thing, or however it works, but it's just like, it's a kind of an awkward picture because it looks like Pauly Shore is photobombing your picture. You
know, like, yeah, we were just going to get this picture, and guess who popped in? Encino Man.
Right, yeah.
I wasn't Brendan Fraser technically the Encino Man?
Yeah.
Wrong reference. Sorry.
But yeah, man. So I don't know. But yeah, you'll be here performing. People can come out and see you at the Valley Park Funny Bone. December 26th is the Best of St. Louis show.
Yeah, and that's going to be me, Pete Lytle, Scott James, and then our MC for the night is going to be Max Price.
All right.
Yeah, so that'll be a good show.
For sure, yeah.
We're doing two the day after Christmas, so if you guys don't want to kill your family, I suggest you come out to the Valley Park Funny Bone and see a pretty awesome show.
Yeah, and you'll also be New Year's Eve here, right?
Yeah, New Year's Eve. Yeah, I've had that longer. I got put on the Best of St. Louis when we decided we'd be open the day after Christmas.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm doing the New Year's Eve show. I did it last year with Lisa. It's a fun time. Two New Year's ago, I had just started hanging out with a group of friends I hang out with mainly outside of comedy, and we were trying to decide what to do for New Year's Eve, and we ended up just doing a party. And that was fun, but last year when I was here for New Year's Eve, it was just like, oh, why doesn't everyone go to the comedy club?
Yeah.
It is such a good time. You see a show, and then it's over, and you get champagne, and you hang out here, and you drink all night, and get a DUI on your ride home, I guess. I assume everyone took a cab.
Right.
but it's a great time. I recommend anyone come and see the show. And Lisa is hilarious.
Yeah, Lisa Landry?
Yeah. She has an entire album that I recommend everyone buy that is called, she wrote it during her divorce, and it's all about material that you shouldn't do during a divorce, and it's called Use This Against Me. So I think she's just great. She's hilarious.
Yeah, I'm not familiar, but check it out.
Mm-hmm.
So what gets you into stand-up personally? When did that all start?
In April 19th, I'll have been doing it 8 years. And I started, let me make sure that's right. I started in 2007. So no, I've been doing it 8 years now. I'll be doing it 9 years in April. I started when I was in high school. Well, like a month before I graduated. I was 18 years old. I was actually at play rehearsal. And a friend of mine were talking about some movie. And he was laughing. And he told me I should do stand-up. And he had done stand-up a couple of times at this club that is now closed called Laughs on the Landing. So he was like, I'll get you in. We can go. We'll do it. So that Thursday before we opened, the school that I was doing the plays through, because I'd go to girls' schools and when I was in high school to do plays, because they need guys, and you could just, you know, they have six guys, so if you can read the lines halfway competently, you're going to get a really good part. So the school that I was at, they would do the Thursday before we opened. Actors weren't called. It was just a tech rehearsal. So the actors got to go and rest. So I decided to go home and rest by going out to a comedy club till midnight. And I told two of my teachers about it, my calculus teacher and my health teacher, who are also friends, and they decided they were going to come. And so my buddy and I get down there, and my buddy gets me down there way after sign up. Like they were very adamant they weren't going to put me up. But right. It was an open mic at Last on the Landing, so they needed audience members. So my teachers actually went up, and they're like, well, you know, our student was going to go up, but if he's not, we're going to leave. And he was like, oh, whoa. Who said he's not going up?
Yeah, right. Some more time just opened up.
Exactly. So I got on the list that way, and then I just started doing it, and with the exception of one break that was about when I was working at Shop and Save, I didn't do it nearly as much for around 6 months. And then I moved out of state when I was 21 for just a little bit. And when I got back, I started doing it really hardcore until I just kind of burned out.
Yeah.
Because the open mic, doing open mics regularly, if you don't go insane, you're not doing it right. You know, I mean, it is just, it can just beat you down. If you're not getting any traction. And when I took my break, when I took the second break, when I started working at the school for kids with autism, I took a break for like half a year. Yeah, I don't think I did any shows between like August and March, maybe like two or three. And that was more involved with the independent movie I was trying to make at the time.
Okay.
During that break, it got way easier to get work in this town. When I left, it was good luck, you know. Because there were a lot of guys who, you know, I mean, the headliners who lived in town were guys like Warren and Essig and sure. Tommy Jonigan. And then that just made the feature scene more competitive, which in turn makes the MC scene more competitive. So it was just super competitive. Then all those guys at the top just left, and a lot of people got booted up. And when I got back, it's not that it still isn't competitive. It's just a whole lot less competitive now. And then there were also two clubs. When I got back, this place had opened.
Yeah.
So there were twice as many dates available for MCs as well.
Now we'll have a third.
Yeah, Helium's opening. Yeah. So
excited to check that out.
They got some good shows coming up, it looks like.
Yeah, I talked a little bit with Kenny Kynes about it, but yeah, you know, I think it'd be interesting to see how it does, and you know, but as for comics, you know, it gives them a third stage time to go up and
exactly, yeah.
So
and yeah, I mean that was what was the best thing about when I started when I was 18 years old. There were three comedy clubs in St. Louis. There was Laughs on the Landing, which was an urban room. Then you had the Comedy Forum out in St. Peter's.
Yeah.
And so that was a little bit more of a toothless room. Although I love the Comedy Forum, I got so much better by going to the Comedy Forum. And a lot of it has to do with how Al Canal ran his open mic. Because He was very free. He was very open. He really did encourage creativity. But if you pissed him off for a second, he wasn't going to let you leave without knowing that you had pissed him off why you had pissed him off and why what you did was bullshit, and then he'd just forget about it. Then after it was done. One time I was supposed to MC for him on a Friday night when he was running this other club called Glass of Laughs, and I just couldn't make it. So I sent him a Facebook message like an hour before the show, and the next day I got a very angry Facebook message from him that's like, hey, a phone call would have been nice.
Right.
But then I called him up and I apologized, and he's like, okay, you know, just so you know, that kind of stuff's not great. That out of the way, what are you doing tonight? So, you know, I mean, that was a really interesting way to see him run things. And then, because you had those two clubs when I started, Westport was like the show. You know, it was so hard to get on. You had to sign up through MySpace at the time. That's when MySpace was a thing. You had to sign up through MySpace. They'd post the list Sunday, so you'd know if you were going or not. And then Tuesday, you could come and watch the show if you hadn't made the list. But that was after a little while after I'd started Laughs on the Land. He was running their open mic on Tuesdays, and I just wanted the mic time, which is good and bad. Now, from the standpoint I'm in now, I see it as like, you know, oh, man, you should have just been going to Westport and getting your face shown around. And then another end of me is like, well, the mic time didn't hurt.
Yeah.
So.
I saw you recently. It was at the at Blueberry Hill in the comedy in the Duck Room.
Yeah.
With Ryan Sickler and
real cool guy, real funny guy.
That was a great show, man. I had a whole lot of fun down there.
That show was a blast. Not only was it packed, it was just a damn good show. Like, those people got every cent of their money's worth, I felt like. But it was the interesting thing about the Duck Room show, and by the way, the Duck Room show is amazing. Best independent show in St. Louis. They get the best names. They get the best audience, from what I've experienced. That Duck Room show happens in the basement. Ah, give it up for the train, everyone, if you can hear that. It's in the basement in the Duck Room, and it's just the folly of live entertainment, because I go up there for, I forget if I did 15 or 20, but for 15 to 20 minutes, just murdered in front of these people. Everyone enjoyed the hell out of what I was doing. I was the king of comedy while I was on stage. Go upstairs to smoke a cigarette. It's like, oh, yeah, this giant upstairs at Blueberry Hill. That didn't happen to anyone up here.
No.
Me down there. And that's just the folly of live performance to me in a certain extent. It's like you try so hard and you can do so well, but the next day, doesn't matter. Didn't happen.
Yeah. I do feel like, I don't know. It's kind of like the thing with, for comedy in it too. Like it's cool to be like down there in the basement and like, and same thing even kind of with Westport Funny Bone, like where it's like, it's just down, it's not really in the basement, but the fact that like you walk into that room and it feels like a basement because it's like low ceiling.
It's on the first floor.
Right.
Yeah, low ceiling. It's wider than it is long.
Yeah. But I just feel like that's the kind of that's a good room to be in, like kind of like that kind of vibe, like just kind of, I don't know, I guess this is where comedy kind of got started, you know. It's like all in the basements of all these places and stuff, and
yeah, all these old discos turned into comedy clubs. That's where the modern day version of stand-up comedy and the comedy club came from, and it was always very intimate, and that's why I love that's why I love comedy clubs in general, is because it's right there. You know exactly how most people are feeling. I mean, the lights will get into your field of vision a little bit, but you can gauge like actual responses from people's faces.
Yeah.
I was doing one show in Columbia at Deja Vu, and this guy who was sitting to stage right. Sometimes if I'm drinking on stage, I'll like try to cheers the audience, and one guy made the cheers motion too, and he cheers back. I went, "Love you, baby," and he just gave me the dirtiest look, and I made a joke out of like he hated that for like 2 seconds, and you know that's what I like about the intimacy, because I've never done a big theater. I mean, I did the Ivory for some show, but you know, no one was there. I've never done a super big theater, but I think, I mean, I've been on stage for performances like that, and I mean, the audience is very much central to what you're doing, but disconnected from that sense. Mm-hmm. So that's why I like comedy clubs.
Sure. Have you always been like the funny guy in class, or?
Oh yeah, no.
Get started in it.
When I was in third grade, I would get so out of hand that my teacher actually wanted to test me for autism.
Yeah.
Or Asperger's, yeah. I chased the teacher with scissors as a joke. I mean, any chance I got to make a spectacle out of myself, I took. We had video announcements when I was in high school, and one year the student council was doing Bachelor of the Week for the turnaround dance, the hatchet hop, the girls ask the guy kind of dance. And it was the Valentine's Day dance, so we were doing Bachelor of the Week. And the student council president asked me, hey, you want to be the Bachelor of the Week this week? And I'm like, sure, I get to go on the announcements and do something. So I grabbed my buddy Ian Bope, and him and I sang Whole New World on the announcements. And like, now, yeah, exactly. Now I think back to it, and it's like the gayest thing I could have ever done. But at the time, it got people to know who I was.
Right.
And then the next year, I did this commercial for something called PC Power Hour, which was a way to do your homework since we had gotten rid of the computer lab. And that was my first taste of celebrity, because it went from being in a school where no one knew who I was. And my school was big. I met two girls who went to my high school at the same time as I did after a show 2 weeks ago. And one of them was a year ahead of me. One of them was a year behind me. Not only did we not know each other, we knew none of the same people. That's how big my school was. So it went from no one knowing who I was to everybody knowing who I was. And then it turned into everyone hating me because they overplayed the commercial too much.
Yeah.
So I call that my first taste of celebrity. Like, oh, wow, they are vultures. Yeah. They just love you until they've had enough, and then they loathe you.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I had a very very different high school. I was like, we were like the first expansion, I guess. So, like, I was technically like a senior for 3 years. Like, we started as sophomores over there, and we were the top class. So every year the building got bigger, and as they were, you know, adding the next phase. So we were until
what school?
To Wentzville.
Okay.
We were Timberland High School was where was the second high school there. So in Wentzville. So yeah, I went out. So yeah, so we were like seniors for 3 years, kind of paving the way there. We got to, like, you know, pick like school colors and that kind of, that kind of stuff. It was an interesting experience.
Did you guys pick the mascot?
Yeah, we got to do a lot of that stuff. Like, I don't know. I mean, some of the stuff they let us like vote on and things. And
other times they just kind of told you what was what.
Yeah, right. I think we picked the school colors because they were also like the tile, like the floor tile colors. Like, so, like, they were like, I think the construction just picked a color, and it was, so it's kind of like a. I think that was part of some of the reasoning. But anyway, but we were very small school, you know, so like where I knew everybody because there was only like 200 of us. So it's like, you know, it was really,
That's.
Yeah. So it was a much different high school experience.
What mascot did you guys pick, if I could ask?
We were the Wolves.
The Wolves?
Yeah.
That's a fine mascot. It's scary. You don't want to fight a wolf.
Right, yeah.
We were the Pioneers.
Yeah.
That is such a dumb mascot.
Yeah.
Hey, don't make us mad or we'll move west.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you're lucky. Our kicker contracted gangrene because we're the Pioneers.
But yeah, it was weird, man. It was fun. It was, I really enjoyed high school. I got involved a lot with I did sports early on in school, and then I freshman and sophomore year, and then junior and senior year I got involved with especially my senior year with DECA and FBLA, and I wrote for the school paper. And
I did DECA, but just because you got to take an all-day field trip once a year. And you got to hang out in a mall when you're supposed to be at school. And then DECA only asks for 15 minutes of your time.
Right.
And they make you take the whole day. So I was in DECA. I wrestled freshman, sophomore year. And then I started doing plays, and I just was like, nope, to the wrestling. I'm going to gain 250 pounds and do plays.
Yeah.
And then student council I did a lot of. I think a lot of people would have a hard time believing that I was just very much involved in student council.
Right.
Because you're right, student council, you know, you can't make, hey, less homework, more tits, you know, you can't make promises like that, because that's not what student council is for, but, you know.
Is that on the bumper sticker?
Yeah, exactly, that was my campaign motto. very popular candidate amongst male voters, not so popular amongst the female voters. They were like, less homework, less tits, and I'm just like, hold down, buttercup. Yeah. But what I liked about student council was I was never one of the guys to go to the dances. I hated that. Really go to most like student activity stuff like that. But I understood that other people it mattered to, and someone has to go set it up. So I didn't mind being the guy who would go and set this crap up.
Yeah.
So.
So get you so doing a little theater in school, is that I was going to bring up that you were you guys filmed a movie. I talked a little bit to Josh Arnold about it over the summer.
Oh, the Impersonators.
Yeah, and the Impersonators. Yeah. How'd you get hooked up and with that movie?
Well, Josh and I are just pals.
Yeah.
And he was when he was getting ready to go back and do his reshoots for it. Him and I were bouncing a lot of ideas off each other about it, and then he was like, hey, if you're not doing anything for like 3 weeks, do you want to come down and be a production assistant? We can probably get you a little part in the movie. And I was just like, hell yes. And because I was in between jobs at the time. I'd gotten the job at the autism school, but I had left Subway like 3 weeks prior when I'd thrown out my back, so... I had about 2 months to fill, and I was living off my tax return. I got a really healthy tax return that year, so I was living off that, and it was just like, yeah, absolutely, I'll go. And it was a real fun experience. It was really interesting to see firsthand how movies are made like that, being a part of it. Frankie Chubb and I had to share a room the entire time.
Yeah.
And we didn't kill each other, which is like, that's a testament to how decent of a friends we are.
Yeah.
And that's even after he went back to St. Louis right before we wrapped shooting, and for the like last 2 days brought back Charlie Winfrey and had him stay in our room. And when he told me about it, he's like, we're driving back and I gotta bring Chuck, otherwise I'm not gonna make it back. And I go, okay, but he isn't allowed in my bed. He stays out of there.
Yeah.
And I had been at shooting when they got back, and I came back, and that thing was in my bed. Just Charlie sitting there, hey, Doc, what's up? You know, now Charlie is. And, so The Impersonators was fun.
Yeah. I watched the movie, you know, whatever, over the summer, I guess, at the Tivoli.
Yeah, so you were at the screening?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a nice little screening.
Yeah, it was fun. You got little red carpet treatment and stuff.
I had to pay for my ticket.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Josh had told me I got a comp, and this guy, Chris Clark, who had done comedy, came over, and he was like, you don't get a ticket.
Yeah.
I'm in the fucking movie, man.
I was teasing Josh because when I showed up there, it was like one red rug in front of like the backdrop kind of thing with the sponsors and stuff like that. So
yeah.
I was teasing Josh like, "Hey, you got the red carpet treatment here. You got one red rug and So it was it was fun though. I enjoyed the film. It was really cool to see a lot of friends. You know, like you said, Frankie's in the film also.
Yeah, and Frankie's really funny. The movie overall is really funny, but and I've seen the movie like 5 times. We just recorded commentary for it a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And when we did that, I was even joking. Like, before I was like, we have to watch the fucking Impersonators again. But Josh is so funny in that movie.
Yeah.
Check it out. Buy it. Yeah. Get the digital download whenever it comes out. It's Christmas time, so, you know, spend your money, you hucks. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that was nonsense. But no, the movie ended up being pretty decent and real funny. And that Winston guy, because my big scene, I got to act with the bad guy.
Yeah.
I can't remember this actor's name for the life of me ever. But He was so much fun to act with. He's probably one of my favorite actors I've acted with.
Yeah.
Because when we were doing the scenes, you know, when it was my my shots, you know, he'd be reading his lines to me, and you know, I'd say my line back, and then before he'd say his next line, he's like, "Yeah, that was good. Give it to me harder." And then he'd say his next line, and then it was just fun to work with an actor like that. He's just like, "Yeah, let's raise the intensity. Yeah. Let's, you know, match me." Instead of I've been in certain productions where I've had to lead other actors around the stage. Like, when I was the Cowardly Lion in Wizard of Oz, I noticed that when it was the Scarecrow, Tin Man, Dorothy, and the Lion, all our blocking was done where we would split center stage, and I would be on the same side of the stage as Dorothy. And I'm like, why am I always with Dorothy? And I realized, oh, it's because she's terrible, and they want me to act her emotion. Because that's what I do. I turn to her and I'd be like, oh, we're happy now. Or we're scared. You know, I just play off of whatever emotion she had and I'd make it bigger.
Yeah.
And it didn't help that she was the director's daughter, so I couldn't say anything. Like, hey, you guys know she's a big old wet blanket, right? Because I was feeling really bad about that production. Sorry to get off topic, but I was feeling really bad about that production after one of the performances, and the Tin Man and I were riding to the cast party together. And I'm just, you know, I'm just feeling, I'm real bummed out. And he goes, hey, look, man, we're the band on the Titanic right now. The ship's sinking, don't get me wrong, but we're not the iceberg. Yeah. Our instruments may be adding some weight, but the iceberg's name is Dorothy, so.
I can't remember whose face they use. But you're talking about the bad guy. He holds up a picture.
Jay-Z and Kenny are in the picture.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Man, I laughed so hard at that. Like, nobody else in the theater laughed. Like,
nobody else who sees that movie is going to get why that's so funny. Yeah, right. Unless you know those two people, it's kind of funny.
Right.
I remember I was getting props out of Josh's car, and I saw that picture. And they're just both smiling, looking like two doofuses. Yeah. And I was with you. I thought it was the funniest picture I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
But it's just like, that's actually not played for a joke.
Sure. Yeah. Like, you could tell who was, you know, involved in St. Louis comedy in the theater, because, like, I was like, sitting next to, I think, like, Joe Murray and a couple others, and we're sitting there, and we're all just cracking up. But like I said, nobody else in the theater gets why it's funny. But
yeah, because it's not funny, sure, Tim. Yeah, to most people, it's not. Yeah. It's not even a joke, really.
Yeah, sure. Just a random shot of them, but it was good.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you still do a little Cowardly Lion?
No, I haven't done the Cowardly Lion since I took that part, and that was I had done the Wizard of Oz one time in high school. And that and Oklahoma are the only two plays I've done twice.
Yeah.
And I just actually like both of them a lot. The Wizard of Oz is a lot of fun to be a part of. Oklahoma is even more fun to be a part of, but I like the play a lot better. Mm-hmm. But Oklahoma is always a fun time because you just need a huge cast. Sure. And then the ensemble actually has shit to do for the most part. And so there is much of it as a principal, because, like, you know, I don't really dance, I'm not really much of a singer, so you've got to give me a part with some lines. So in a lot of plays you'll get this crap where the principal actors haul off in their own little clique and, you know, don't talk to the ensemble. But Oklahoma's always better for, like, bleeding those two together. Last audition I went on was for I auditioned for Shakespeare in the Park. Haven't heard back about it. Didn't get a call back, but they didn't turn me away either. So I'm just waiting for the rejection email sometime in March.
My dad did Oklahoma in school.
Yeah.
You know, back in the 70s. And he, I don't know, like, I forget the role he did, but, like, still people bring it up, you know, like high school friends, obviously.
Yeah.
And stuff, but, like, somebody will say something like that, they still remember him as from Oklahoma and stuff. So it's kind of funny how, like, that some of that stuff kind of sticks with you. And
A funny story about the second time I did Oklahoma. First time I did Oklahoma, I was the bad guy, so I just had to be hulking and intimidating, which isn't too hard for me, I guess. But second time around, I played this character named Ali Hakim, who is he's a Persian peddler in the play, And traditionally, you cast it with, you just have a white guy play the part. Bruce Adler did the part in the movie, and from Green Acres. And my director was like, okay, like right before we went into tech, like the lad, I can't pull out and say, no, I don't want to do this. He's like, okay, we need to get you a black rinse for your hair. And I look shitty with black hair. And then he goes, and we need to get you bronzer. And so he had me bronze up my face and my hands and then put this jet black rinse in my hair and then slick it back. I was in blackface.
Right.
I wasn't. Hey, okay, we're trying to convince people I'm something I'm very much not.
Right.
If you wanted an ethnic Ali Hackam, why did you cast the whitest boy available?
Yeah.
And then when I would go out after the shows, I would rub my hands on my face and through my hair, and the makeup and rinse would come off all over my hands, and it would, like, deteriorate. It looked like I'd been in a sandstorm, because you'd see the little bit of blonde in my hair with the black. It just looked like I was caked in dirt.
Yeah. I do find that interesting, like, you know, you look at even, you know, major movies, stuff like Johnny Depp as the Lone Ranger, and Tom Cruise as the Last Samurai, and
yeah, but so, like, there's wasn't like, the I've never seen the Last Samurai, but wasn't the Last Samurai supposed to be American though? Wasn't that character Americanized?
I don't know, maybe that's not a great example, but yeah,
just, Tonto Johnny Depp, I agree with Johnny Depp just has black hair; he can't play ethnic.
Right, there's a lot of stuff like they get, you know, white guys to play these roles, and it's like, you know, there are plenty of ethnic characters that they could, you know, cast in these spots.
That's my big problem with like movies like Brokeback Mountain or anything where you have a straight guy who's so brave for playing a gay guy. Yeah. It's just like, yeah, okay, so you're telling me you couldn't find two gay actors in Hollywood?
Yeah, geez.
You're not looking anywhere. You didn't. Yeah, exactly. For movies like that especially, it's just... But then, I don't know. I think that there's some idea that it's not acting if you have gay people playing gay people. But that's not, you know, no one's going to watch a production of Raisin in the Sun, which is about an all-black family, and be like, oh, that black guy wasn't acting. His family's probably black. You know, no one's going to think that.
Yeah.
You
a big fan of film?
Also? Oh, love movies. Love them. Saw Star Wars on Thursday night at 10:15.
Enjoy it?
Oh, loved it. Yeah. So great. Everyone needs to see it. I think it has a legitimate shot at winning Best Picture.
I don't know. I mean, I've seen the first three. I don't know. They're fine, but I just never got into it as much as most people.
See, when I was a kid, I got into it super hard. Yeah. Like, I wasn't super athletic when I was a kid, so like, and I went to a very small parochial school for grade school.
Yeah.
So there were only like 28 kids in my class. 11 of them were boys. So all the boys at recess would want to play soccer or, you know, baseball or something. I had no interest, so it was all, you know, it was my entire grade level boys on the field kicking a ball around, and then me standing by the flagpole pretending to be Darth Vader or something. So Star Wars was actually just, it was a very instrumental point in my development as a person.
Yeah.
Like, Star Wars, Robin Williams, and the Beatles have been a better influence on my life than my own father. So, So, you know, when the new one was coming out, I was so excited. I got tickets the day for the opening night. The day they went on sale, I read on Facebook, crashing movie ticket sites. And I'm like, okay, time to get my tickets.
Yeah.
And it was everything I could have wanted and more.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of good stuff. And then, of course, a lot of people putting fake spoilers and everything else up. But
I hate people who put actual spoilers. My buddy... A really good friend of mine has a really nasty habit of getting involved in long political discussions on Facebook. And he was getting in an argument with some troll last night. And the dude, in one of his retorts to Zach's thing, posted like a major spoiler from the movie. And my buddy Zach's like, I already saw it. What the hell are you doing? That's not cool overall. And it bugs me with the internet like that, how someone can just type something out, hit enter, takes them 5 seconds, and they've ruin someone's day.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of people that, you know, you roll through any YouTube comments and stuff, people just sit behind their keyboard and spew all kinds of hate and stuff, and it's like...
And they do it to get a rise out of people, which yeah. That's what I don't understand, is it's just, why are you sitting behind a computer all day just trying to get a rise out of people?
Right.
I can go out in public and get rises out of people all I want. The caveat there is that someone might hit me in the dick or something, but so that's why you just don't behave that way in general. Like, sure. You just want to be a nice person. And on the internet, it's so much more anonymous, so much more easy. And but you're ultimately going to be the one who suffers, because no matter how mad you make someone, no matter how many times they respond, and one time I saw a YouTube comment where these people have been going at it for like 6 months. And like it would die down for 2 weeks, and then there'd be one day where they went at each other for like 6 more posts. Yeah. And I have to blame the guy who was in the right on that one, because the guy who was holding the contrary opinion was trolling, just trying to get this guy angry, and he found the bait.
Sure.
And so every once in a while there'd be a point where the troll got the last word, and then you'd see like 2 days later the guy who was like... The guy who was in the right had been thinking about it and been like, you know what? No. That guy doesn't get a win. He doesn't get to win.
Yeah. I posted a video on my personal account a while back of a blues band, Jeremiah Johnson, who's lives here in town. And I had a guy, Tom Papa, was playing harmonica with him. And then he actually sang the lead on a song. It was a Bo Diddley cover, and they did. And anyway, put the video up, and somebody commented on there like, yeah, I love Tom, but why does he always try to sing like he's black or something like that? And it was his comment. And this was like 6 months ago, a year ago, whatever.
What is the point of bringing race into it?
And like, what I cracked up is like Tom actually found the video. I didn't tag him in it or whatever, but he found, like, I guess he was searched and found the video, and he commented back to that guy. So I'm reading the comment, you know, since it's on my video, like, I'm reading the comments as they're going, and he's like, but it just cracked me up that, like, a year later, he replies to the comment about, like, not that he's, you know, I'm not trying to sing black or whatever.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, a year later, it's done, man.
Yeah. It was,
time to let it go.
But it's, I don't know. That's the
nature of the internet.
Yeah, that's the time we live in now.
Yeah. But yeah, back to your original question. I'm a huge movie guy. Yeah. I love them all. I watch movies all the time.
What, so we're getting in, Christmas time. Do you have a favorite Christmas, film?
Ooh, favorite Christmas film. That's a tough one. Muppet Christmas Carol is up there for sure.
Yeah.
I think no one does Christmas like the Muppets. All their specials I actually like for the most part. Muppet Christmas Carol I like, because I remember seeing that in theaters. I think it came out in like 91, 92. So I would have been 2 or 3 when I saw it in theaters. So it's one of the first movies I saw in a movie theater.
Yeah.
And I just think it's really well done.
Sure.
I also like the George C. Scott Christmas story, if you like your Christmas Carol a little bit more sober.
Yeah.
You know, I like my Christmas Carol like a stiff shot of Jack, so I like the George C. Scott Christmas Carol. You know, when I'm over, Christmas Story. Yeah. Loved it, but this 24-hour Christmas Story marathon has just ruined me for it.
Sure.
It feels like I ate too much turkey or something, you know? I like, I mean, there's a lot of... My mom loves the Hallmark Channel, and she watches so much Christmas crap.
Yeah.
Between Halloween and Christmas, because that's all they play. And it's like, you know, The Littlest Elf, or The Christmas with No Tree, and, you know, stuff like that. They're just made-up problems to just...
Right.
Hey, we've got 20 grand, and we can make a movie for Hallmark.
I love Zach Galifianakis has that joke about Hallmark, like, or no, it was Lifetime, sorry.
Mm.
Same difference. It's all the same.
Yeah. About the same level of quality.
Yeah. But he goes, his joke about Lifetime, he says, like, hey, did you guys see that movie about that woman that killed her husband? And that's like every you know, cheap Lifetime movie. They're all about the same, and I feel like Hallmark's right on that level, like where they're all pretty much about the same.
Yeah.
Caliber, and they
exactly. Someone doesn't appreciate Christmas.
Yeah.
Everyone else around him wants him to appreciate Christmas.
Yeah.
Surprise ending, he appreciates Christmas. That's the plot.
I talked to Kenny, and he said that his favorite was Die Hard. Do you believe that's a Christmas film?
Or? Oh, it's absolutely a Christmas film.
Yeah.
I don't think that was ever their intention. I think Christmas was a nice little backdrop. But if we're going to be including those, I think Batman Returns is a better Christmas movie.
Yeah.
There's a little more. Christmas plays a little bit more of a central role in the plot.
Right.
But Die Hard, yeah, that's a Christmas movie. I like it a lot. I mean, who doesn't like Die Hard? That thing's just the tits, but let's see how many times I can say tits on your podcast.
It's going to be a drinking game if you
drink every time I say tits. You're getting drunk right now.
I do feel like that would be a good quote on the back of the DVD, like it's the tits, Andrew Topping.
<you know? laughs> Andrew Topping, Morning in St. Louis. That's how you know you get a bad movie, is if you like look at the DVD cover and there's a quote from some like local morning show. Yeah. It's like, you know, Tulsa in the AM says, "Intolerable Cruelty is a fantastic film, a must see." Yeah. They found the one reviewer who actually liked it. Hey, have you ever been to the store and you see, like, the $5 DVD bin and, you know, it's just, they just throw a bunch of crap in there? Doesn't it bug you if you see a movie you like in there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're, like, looking at it and you're just like, Gunshy, that's a decent film.
Yeah.
The Proposal for $5? Are you serious?
I'm a big fan, but kind of going back to, Star Wars, like, for me, it's always been just comedy, though. I never got into a lot of those, you know, various, like, you know, I was telling, just a lot of the big ones that everybody kind of freaks out about, like, I don't get into, but I've always been a huge fan of comedy movies. I probably watched the Tommy Boy, like, 100-something times, and
I watched it twice the Thanksgiving weekend, because it was on Comedy Central.
Yeah, it was on, I remember, like, you know, whatever, 90... 6, 97, whatever, whenever it hit HBO and stuff. We had satellite dish, so we had like HBO East and West, and like, so I'd watch it on the West Coast time, and then I'd an hour later be on the East Coast or something like that. So I watched it on like repeat a bunch that summer and stuff.
HBO is actually really good about that. It's like, hey, you came in 15 minutes towards the end. Well, guess what? We're going to be playing it for the other coast in a little bit, so you can see it then.
Sure.
Yeah, I got into comedy when I got into middle school, when I was about in 6th and 7th grade. That's when I started getting, like, more focused on, like, comedy stuff. I was way into Star Wars. I loved Disney when I was a kid. I still like Mickey Mouse a lot.
Yeah, well, like, singing Aladdin.
Singing Aladdin on the morning announcements.
Sure.
I liked Disney. I liked Star Wars. And then sometime around 5th grade, I got really into Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Which, like, was insane for my mom's side of the family, because they were always very sensory about what people watched. Like, it's really funny. My girl cousins, it was very interesting to me how sheltered they were growing up compared to how we were. I remember this one time we were watching Nickelodeon at my grandmother's house. And there was a commercial for Metamucil. And I'm like, what is this doing on here? Do kids need to be kept regular?
Yeah.
And
kids need more fiber.
Exactly. And one of my cousins goes, that's not what Metamucil's for. It's for migraines. And it turns out that their mom was on Metamucil but didn't want to tell them it was to help her poop. So they just, I get migraines. I'm going to the bathroom so I can be in darkness. But they were the ones who were always more censored, so we had to watch out what we could watch when we were over at my grandmother's. But then my parents were divorced, so whenever we were over at my dad's, my dad hated kid shit. Hated it. So that's how I got into stuff like Back to the Future, Indiana Jones, James Bond, because my dad, when, you know, our entertainment for the weekend would be, we're going to rent some movies. We're just going to haul up in my two-bedroom apartment and watch movies and try not to murder each other. And so he'd be like, okay, we're going to do all three Back to the Futures this weekend. Okay, we're going to do the two Batman movies, you know, and that got me interested in movies overall. And then around fifth grade, I really got into Chris Farley, and then I got into John Belushi even more.
Yeah.
And so I was big into like Blues Brothers, Animal House,
sure.
The Breakfast Club. Somehow I got to. I ended up getting to John Hughes through all that. And seventh grade, I watched The Breakfast Club every day after school. And I memorized the damn movie. Yeah. I mean, I still think it's a decent flick, but I had to stage manage a stage production of it, and that kind of soured me on the whole experience.
What was your favorite cast in SNL?
Oh, that's a tough one. There was a lot of silliness when it was like Hartman, Sandler, Farley, Spade, Schneider.
Yeah.
There was just a lot of really fun silliness going on at that time, so I like a lot of what they do. Other times, it gets to be just kind of annoying noises.
Yeah.
I like when Chris Farrell was like the main guy, and like every episode was the Will Ferrell show.
Yeah.
That was also a really good time. I think this current cast isn't bad at all.
Yeah, there's a lot of great people on right now. I just watched the Tina Fey, Amy Poehler episode from last night, this mm-hmm. morning. It's a lot of good stuff. There's a couple that don't hit quite as hard. That's going to happen. But there's some solid writing and some great actors and comedians on there.
Because, I don't know, I stopped watching a few years ago, but then I watched the Tracy Morgan episode, and then I've started... I don't watch the whole episodes anymore, but I have Hulu, so I can just watch individual sketches.
Yeah.
And I really like most of what I see.
Tracy's episode was a little weird, like, you know, and I get what... It was huge for him to even be there, you know? Like,
yeah.
The fact that he survived everything, and he's back to performing.
But he was promoting nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just a friend. Like, the fact that, like, I felt like he was reading a lot. Like, you could tell, like, he was looking at right at the cue card during this, you know. I get that it happens, but it's like it's nice when they can pull off, you know, at least kind of being involved in the sketch and stuff instead of just reading right from the card. And
yeah, the actors who go on that show seem to be a lot better about it. I mean, that's why they've had guys like Alec Baldwin and John Goodman back so much, is that those guys are actors. So sure. You give them lines, they're going to be off book. They want to be in the scene.
Tom Hanks,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's why they're so good at hosting the show.
Yeah.
Also, I hear, like, from what I've read, Tom Hanks is one of those hosts who will do anything.
Yeah.
Like, you just got to talk to him. Because sometimes these guys come in, like, I read the book Live from New York. Sometimes these guys come in, and it's insane how what some celebrities who are known for serious stuff think of comedy. Like, Mel Gibson apparently kept pitching a sketch when he was there called Bird's Head Regurgitated. How is that a sketch?
I got big into SNL around the same time I was watching Tommy Boy and stuff, because they started, or maybe a little later, but like they started getting running the repeats on Comedy Central all the time, and which I don't know why they quit doing. But
they started back up, but they're more recent episodes.
Yeah, but I watched those that mid '90s era with like I said, Sandler, Spade, and Farley and all those guys, they played a lot of those on repeat over on there, and I was just like, that's because I didn't, you know, at that time I wasn't watching a lot of late night Saturday television when they were on.
Yeah. But you'd want to go back and see what Pamela Anderson had done or whoever. I remember they played that episode a lot.
Yeah.
They were
great though. I love that cast. It was just, that's, you know, for me, that's what I grew up with, you know. So
we didn't grow up with cable. We got cable fairly late. I forget around when. And then it took my dad still a few more years to get cable over at his place. So we didn't have cable a long time, but my grandmother did. So whenever we go over to my grandmother's house, we'd watch Comedy Central. And it's just so funny to me how old Comedy Central is nothing like Comedy Central today. Because I remember Comedy Central would air soap reruns and then a movie. But the movie was never anything like, you know, now they'll show you Hall Pass or some big budget comedy movie, but their movies were like Beer with the dad from Boy Meets World, yeah. And Class Act, I think it was called, with Rob Lowe or something. And, like, they'd air these really shitty old comedy movies that were cheap as hell.
Yeah.
And then it would just be Whose Line Is It Anyway? Saturday Night Live. And the British Whose Line.
Yeah.
Saturday Night Live and Kids in the Hall. And we'd just watch that all day. We wouldn't laugh a lick, but we would watch it all.
There was a... Was it Kids in Hall? I don't think so. There was another one right around that, a similar type of sketch show, or maybe it was Kids in Hall. But Amy Poehler was on. Was it?
Oh, Upright Citizens Brigade.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah.
And then they started throwing out stuff like that. Yeah, after South Park hit big for them, their original program. But it took their original programming a little while to even get their own footing, because it was like Strangers with Candy, which is a funny show.
Yeah.
But I can understand why aesthetically people didn't want to watch it every week.
Yeah.
And Upright Citizens, which once again is a funny show, but it's just, it's really weird. It's a tough sell to most people, I think.
The one that I remember the most that sticks out and makes me still laugh. There was like a bit they were doing where this guy, he was like playing like a mentally challenged character, and he had apparently like this enormous dick, and and it was like hanging out of his shorts, and it was like all blurred and everything, obviously.
Yeah.
And, but like he was like riding a bike, and his dick got caught in the spokes of the bike or something like that, like this kind of stuff, and like. It was so it was a little dark, and but it made me laugh really hard. And
Win Ben Stein's Money.
Yeah.
I remember watching a ton of that before Jimmy Kimmel was anything.
Yeah.
I wonder to this day how he got that show,
right?
Because he had Man Show after, but I think it was because of how well he did on Win Ben Stein's Money.
I think even before all that, I think he used to be in radio. I think him and Adam Carolla started in radio together, and that's a lot of where their success came from. But I believe that's the story. I don't know for sure, but yeah. Now Jimmy's like number two in late night.
He's a really good late night host.
Yeah.
He's funny. He's got real goofy stuff going on all the time. And it's not like I like a lot of what Jimmy Fallon's done with the Tonight Show, where I think it's just it seems like it's just a much more loose, fun show.
Yeah.
And the comedy comes from being in the moment. But Jimmy Kimmel does all that stuff, but he scripts it out. He knows what he's going to do, and it's just as wacky, just as fun, just as loose. There was my favorite was when they did the cast of The Monuments Men, and they didn't bring Matt Damon out with everyone.
Yeah.
And then when they brought him out, they gave him a stool, and they still weren't talking to him.
Yeah.
And then he's like, hey, Jimmy, are you going to ask me a question? And Jimmy goes, yeah, I got a question. What's your fucking problem? It's just great to see a late night talk host do that.
Yeah, that's like a running thing for a while now. Like with Matt Damon, I think I saw something on Facebook where they like parodied the poster for Martian, and it was like the poster on Martian was like bring him home or something like that, and then Jimmy made one with his face in there. It says leave him there. leave Matt Damon in space.
And
like, so it was pretty good.
Hilarious.
You still want
to... I don't have a copy of it.
Oh.
And we're still doing Christmas Eve, so...
Yeah.
I don't know, Shane.
Yeah?
I mean, do you have anything you want to finish with? One last question or anything?
I don't know. We were going to do... we had an idea...
I memorized some of it when I was in sixth grade.
Yeah.
I had to memorize the whole thing. You want to see how much I still remember?
Let's try.
All right. For all of you out here on Christmas Eve, here's a little Night Before Christmas for you. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief, and I in my cap, had just settled our brains for a long winter nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters, and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave a luster of midday to objects below, when what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and eight tiny reindeer. lost my spot. I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick, more rapid than eagles, his courses they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet and Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky, so up the housetop the courses they flew, when the sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too. And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof, and was turning around down the chimney. St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. Ashes, not asses. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry, his cheeks were like roses, his noses like cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard on his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump. Man, this guy really is hitting home how fat Santa is. This is the story of a guy who's like, hey, I saw Santa, and that dude is a fat fuck. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. Oh, see, he was so fat, I just lost it. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk and laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh. No, his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim as he drove out of sight,
Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
Yeah, you're a Santa in this.
Yes.
Yeah, good job. So there you go. That's my 'Twas the Night Before Christmas with a little bit of commentary.
Yeah, that was beautiful. Not a dry eye in the house.
No, yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, no problem. This was fun, man. You got a great little podcast.
And, thanks, man.
You know, as an independent artist in St. Louis, I do want to thank you personally because you really do promote for a lot of guys. A lot of shit, and that's awesome. Yeah. That is really cool.
I'm trying to help, man. I do realize there's not really a voice for a lot of the people. So I'm trying to help highlight some of my friends around town, and get people turned on to something cool in their own neighborhood here. So
perfect.
I'm having a hell of a time doing it, man. I really enjoy doing this show and hanging out with guys like yourself, and come out to Volley Park Funny Bone. Come see Andrew here the 26th and New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve's going to be great. You should definitely come out. It's going to be a blast.
Make your plans to get drunk at the Funny Bone and get your laugh on.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, yeah, thank you. This has been a great
session. Hey, no, thank you.
We'll see you later.
Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.